This level of liquidity does not currently exist in the Fidelity Fund after explaining. Where is the 50 million rand coming from, and in terms of what legislation is it being allocated? Once the Property Practitioners Act has been promulgated, estate agents will no longer be obliged to pay interest on trust accounts to the authority to supplement the Fidelity Fund. This was an omission in the legislation. Section 32.2C of the existing Act makes provision for this, but it has not been incorporated into the new Act. This omission will have a serious impact on the budget of the EAAB, as the interest amounted to 50 million rand in the previous financial year, so it's a significant amount. Given that this cannot be addressed in law via regulations, how does the board intend to remedy this? And then in terms of audit and accountability, on the 25th of November, about 2 weeks ago, the Honourable Minister Sisulu wrote to the EAAB chairperson, Mr. Biko, requesting clarity on the process followed by the board in the appointment of the CEO, as well as proof of her competencies, qualifications, ministerial approval, and cabinet concurrence in the CEO's appointment. Can the chairperson of the board confirm that this has been submitted to the minister? And in terms of this committee's oversight duty, can we please be provided with a copy of the chairperson's response to the minister regarding the CEO's appointment? On the 5th of November, roughly a month ago, the Honourable Minister Sisulu also wrote to the chairperson of the EAAB, noting serious allegations of irregularities and mismanagement that have occurred within the EAAB and are allegedly continuing to occur, which may implicate the CEO and which have been brought to the attention of the board. The minister requested that she be provided with a program of action that is being implemented in order to address these matters within 7 days of her request. Can the chairperson of the board please confirm that this has been submitted to the minister? And in terms of this committee's oversight duty, can we please be provided with a copy of the chairperson's response? And then with regards to audit in this current financial year, a letter drafted to the EAAB board by an employee noted that the CEO allegedly, and that is crucial here, it's alleged, appointed New Dawn Technologies using the capital budget, which was later changed on the SAP system to reflect under consultancy fees, when in fact there was no budget for this appointment. I'm further informed that New Dawn Technologies was appointed without following any supply chain management processes and were allegedly already working on site by the time the tender award was made. Can either CEO or the chairperson please provide clarity? I'm also informed that a Mr. Maisela was appointed as a temporary staff member in June 2019, a temporary staff member of the Estate Agency Affairs Board in the position of Shadow IT Manager. But it's reported that this gentleman is in fact the registered owner slash director of New Dawn Technologies that was allegedly appointed irregularly. He is responsible now for overseeing services provided to the EAAB by his own company, but he's also receiving a salary from the EAAB. So he's receiving his contract fee plus his salary. So that's like asking the fox to investigate who stole the chicken's eggs. Can the CEO please provide clarity on this? And then my last question is that the CEO recently undertook to sue an employee that gave her feedback in a meeting. We are also informed that a number of attorneys have been appointed to chair various disciplinary committees and hearings at the EAAB by the new CEO, but that these services are, again, allegedly not procured via formal supply chain management processes, but are rather introduced directly via the CEO's office. So to clear this up, can the CEO please confirm which law firms or law firm are formally appointed to represent the EAAB's internal HR matters, and if these have been appointed via formal SCM processes, as well as what the total cost spent at the entity on legal fees is since February. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. You remember I did ask earlier on the other presentation as to what is it that we are accountable to, political administration. And I still believe that it is not our responsibility to deal with administration staff of an entity. The politics, yes. But because even in the answer you gave, Chair, it says not, it is, there is a political report and executive report. Political report should talk politics, administration will talk politics, Politics must be spoken to at the political level and administration at administrative level, and especially on entities, because entities, you create an entity in order to avoid to manage yourself and give someone to manage on your behalf and you. So, but if you still want to meddle with the administrative process thereof, you might as well insource it back to you and run with it. I did get to see these allegations that Councillor Powell is raising. Surely you will want to talk to it. Did I say Councillor? I remember I was the chief whip, so Councillor Chief of Council. Yeah, so it's still with me. I did see what Honourable Powell has raised in this quite wild allegation. But I think, Chair, there is a difference between the view by Solidarity Outa or any other anti-transformatory interest of anti-transformational approach by people. So if you are made to answer on people that are opposing transformation, why do you oppose them? It will be wrong. It will be us justifying that it is right for you to oppose transformation. But these allegations were made, and I'm sure Member Powell is very correct. We must clear it ourselves. But it being the case, CEO, we were in Mark's building the other day. You came and present. And in there, we raised our concerns of this. Remember, even on the other one, there were structures which did not go to the minister, to the board. I mean, to the which was not cabinet approved. And we were asking the integration of the structures and so forth. And there we said, give us the report. The status quo report, where are you? Please talk to that at some point. I think your report is convincing, but to me it is a nice, you are giving us a nice to hear report. Don't give us nice to hear report. Give us the problems that you are facing in order for us to help resolve the problems. This issue of transformation, this issue of anti-transformation, this issue of non-acceptability of the process moving forward. But if we listen to your report, we might close the door and celebrate that we have got the very best EA, and that is not the case. A chocolate that is smeared on a stone, when the sun rises, it will smelt and the stone will still come up. So let's tell us of the stone inside the chocolate. In order for us to understand where we are going, I still believe you have given us too much nice. It is too nice to be true and good. And we can't be happy about that too nice to be good. Finally, there is somebody who asked this question, and because I like him most, I want to ask this question in the transformative manner that you're saying. This man was at some point the president of South Africa, and he asked, who was Ned or Standard in the banks? When do we get Mfokeng Bank? Because these banks, they get created by other people and they become good. So if you want a transformatory bank, the BRICS are bank, it's a problem. If you want the Mufukeng Bank, it's a Simenya Bank. But Absa, Standard, Net Bank, they are like Mashiko Bank, you can't get. Why not? Why not? And I'm sure that the human settlement is starting to create a bank for their own. It's going to be difficult to kickstart because the bigger people with the money, they will not want it to continue. When in actual fact, our apps were started by a conglomerate of people, Volkskas Bank by a conglomerate of people. Well, you can't change this status quo if you just want to be an administrator of the things before you and you don't want to transform. So I think we need to hear that. But as a fundamental point, at the political level, the question raised by Powell on the issue of the allegations made is very important, because if we just continue to work with the CEO who might sometimes get found guilty somewhere when he's wrongly appointed, but wrongly appointed in whose eyes and ears, because and to me, this issue of leaking, you see, it's a pity when people leak information, it becomes too nice to be not to be spoken to, and it is treated as a fact. When in actual fact it was illegally leaked, we are not dealing with that person who leaked it illegally, we are dealing with answer the leakage. So we are justifying it. But you can only do it if you are given proper information in time and we move from a proper context. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Mashiro, Honorable Zeki.
Thank you very much, Chair. Two quick questions. On the internship and or learnership program, do you have any plans in place to absorb these kids after training? The other question is on incubation program. I heard the presenter saying they will source the use of consultants. I'm trying to check if we can partner with the Department of Small Business and Economic Development so that we can be able to save money that would be spent in the usage of consultants. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Zeki. The meeting called here was to check on the action plan for Auditor General's findings and the transformation issues. And if there are questions that are raised outside that, if you don't have an answer, you can just indicate and do the written reply to Honorable Member. Irregular expenditure, as we address it, both the entities must attach names. I agree there must be somebody who have done that irregular expenditure. And usually when you come to Parliament, you nicely put that element. You don't bring the names of those individuals are attached to irregular expenditure. And we are the people who appropriate your money. And when irregular expenditure has been raised by Auditor General, we become very worried. It will help you to tell us who are these people, what have you done about them. Because I've realized that you get happy if it's condoned by Treasury and SCOPA. When you be called by us, you don't tell us. And we are the ones that appropriate your money. So we want the names and individuals that irregular expenditure are attached to them and why you want to condone. And what are the processes that have been followed on those individuals. CEO and chair of a state agency, The Constitution allows fair discrimination. Fair discrimination means that if there are injustices of the past, you can then discriminate fairly to address the injustice of the past. So don't panic about receiving letters and want to reverse the good program that you engage on. But it's important to engage all the stakeholders to understand, to be on the same page with yourself in implementing the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. It's very critical because our understanding would not be the same. There are those that are moving, they want to do away with affirmative action, BEEs, so which is the program to transform the injustices of the past, and therefore the ruling party which is in government will never allow anybody to reverse those programs. In fact, would want the progress every day as you come to account to the portfolio committee. After saying these ones, would want to see, you know, it's very nice presentation indeed, but if this, as you take student and small holder business, you are not actually addressing the transformational issues again. You find that your system is full of men, excluding women, young people. You just, because it's young, you focus on all boys. It's unacceptable. We would want the list that tell us that you are even looking into the gender issues as you transform the institution itself. Because there is this misinterpretation of the special programs. People resort to exclude, because if it's youth, it says that it can be all boys. There's no such. It should continuously address gender on issues that we implement. Lastly, is on the issues of supply chain. We have noted in the Auditor General's report that it's not yourself only. Across all government departments and most of entities, supply chain is a problem in terms of managing it. And DG would want to see how the department you are working with your entities. I know that they were using the different legislation. Some of them, they've just been audited by Auditor General now. But they will have to move with speed in implementing the PFMA as they implement their program. So would want CFO of the department and the DG to work with your entities to fully comply with the PFMA with regard to supply chain management and procurement processes. Because in most instances, irregular expenditure and other things, irregular, wasteful, and useful, wasteful and irregular comes from the supply chain. So, and we want to see the department working very hard to do away with those issues. You can now respond, DG and your team.
Chairperson and members, thank you very much. Indeed, these are pointed and probing questions. I'm sure the respective teams would be in a position to address very specific matters. I thought, Chair, it may be it may assist the committee to contribute the following inputs. Just to put the committee at ease, when I say at ease, the comfort that the governance framework is in place and it's been applied fully. And I will touch on three areas that members had raised. Part of that governance framework is that there are certain appointments in these entities, CEO, CFO, that the board is charged to attend to, but can only finalize in consultation with the minister. So when the board has run a recruitment process, they consult the minister concurs, they can make the appointment. It's important because it's part of governance, because when things go wrong in a public entity, a minister in this case is accountable to this house. In the same way that the office of the DG cannot also be absolved from accountability, that is why it is important that the entities, as they process their recruitment, especially those two, the department and by extension the ministry, is taken into confidence to conclude and concur. So in the appointment of the CFO at the EAB, sorry, at CISOS, it's part of the governance framework that the board recruits, runs the process, and they've consulted the minister. The minister is duly applying her mind, and therefore the entity will be duly informed when the minister concludes that process. And I don't want to enter the space of speculation, save to say that we are at the point where the minister, the matter is before the minister. I can confirm that. Chairperson, I can also confirm that where there are instances of allegations, complaints, assertions that are brought to the attention of the minister, the governance framework dictates that the minister will engage with the board through the chairperson to say, I've become aware of this particular issue. Because the board is there, the board is then charged with attending to that issue and then reporting to the minister. Now, chairperson, I will plead with the committee to rather allow space for that process to run its course, so that the boards are afforded, as the minister has, the space to investigate the matters, be able to exercise their authority in respect of that matter, and be able to respond to the minister within the time frames that are set out. I'm fairly comfortable, Chair. Personally, I can say to the House, on many instances, I do engage with the chairpersons to say there is this matter. I want to be sure that the correspondence with the minister has reached you, that this matter is being attended to. And that's as far as I can go. Beyond that, chairperson, if the board fails to exercise its authority, its responsibility, it leaves the minister no option but to remove the board. Because that's the intervention. The minister can't overreach and step in when the board is there. And at this point, Chair, insofar as the various concerns have been raised, I would plead with the House to allow that process to run its course. Thirdly, similarly, Chair, the considerations around irregular expenditure and losses that derive from that. I'll ask our CFO to elaborate a bit on the procedures that are followed there. But ordinarily, Chair, when an irregularity is detected, it has to be investigated. It has to be sought to establish who the transgressors are, under what circumstance, what is then the loss that accrues as a result thereof, and what is the course of action? even when you go to Treasury Chairperson, you will not simply go and say, well, let's write off, let's condone. No, Treasury wants to know what happened, who did what, and what are the consequences that are attributable to those people. So that process is underway. I'm sure, Chairperson, at a point where these processes are concluded, I'm sure my colleague, the acting ombudsman and the CEO, will get into those. But where the matter is still, I would hesitate to say sub judice, because you have to investigate. If I come here and name a person, Chairperson, I am prejudicing not only the person, but I'm also undermining the very process that is supposed to be fair, procedural, and otherwise. So when those matters are concluded, I'm sure the colleagues will then be able to indicate, even at this point. Lastly, Chair, well, it's not the last one, but I must confirm, Chairperson, that the Public Finance Management Act regulates how we handle public finances. But at the same time, it provides guidance on how to treat certain matters. I can assure this House there is absolutely nothing that an accounting officer such as me can do to prevent what happens at EAB or at CISOS, because I'm not there every day. But I rely on the adherence to the frameworks that are there. That is why, Chairperson, I can only come to realize the transgressions afterwards, after the fact. Because the CEOs run the operations. It's only at the end of the quarter that I can really find out. It's after the fact. Unfortunately, Chairperson, I do not run the entities. I have an oversight responsibility, but the accountability is shared. I'm the accounting officer for the program. They are the accounting officers for the sub-programs, so to speak. And therefore, we can only hold them accountable for their part. And again, as I said, it's after the fact, and that's why the consequences accrue, Chairperson. Lastly, Chair, the House must also be finding confidence in the capacity to detect transgressions, misdeeds, maladministration, or otherwise. Because it is that capacity that enables interventions when they are required. I note, Chairperson, the questions around the time frames. I think the CEO will answer to that. The point I wanted to make, Chairperson, is as follows, that one, we will detect those transgressions after the fact. It does not absolve us from acting when we detect them. And that's our monitoring capability. We have established, Chairperson, a CEO's forum where, again, for the benefit of peer review, knowledge sharing, just momentum in terms of responding to the strategic priorities of the sector, we are engaging in that forum, including, Chairperson, all the matters that the audit arise from the audit. Chair, I want to confirm, as before I ask you to permit the CFO to elaborate on that part, that perhaps there is a conversation that the committee would want to enter into. And that conversation, it's around this transformation agenda. I know that there's a detailed package that the CEO at EAB can put before the House. That is the conversation we are having on the full life cycle of these transformation interventions, so that they are not isolated in the corner there in EAB, but they are embedded in the sector as a whole, because when the tenure of the chair or the tenure of the CEO comes to an end, what becomes of those initiatives? So the sustainability of those initiatives becomes key. And that's the conversation, Chairperson, we are having with my colleague, the CEO, to say, let's look at these matters. And I think the outcome of that, Chairperson, would be what would perhaps benefit from the scrutiny of the committee going forward. Chair, allow me to invite the CEO, Chairperson, sorry, the CFO, before we hand over to the CEO and the acting ombud, to clarify that matter on the treatment of the regular expenditure, with your permission, Chair.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Chairperson of the Board, and I think it's afternoon already. Chair, I think let me agree with the Portfolio Committee on the picking up of irregular expenditures, left, right, and centre. And I think the member, Mamkhotu, has also pointed out on the issue of water and sanitation, of which we do agree is a big one, Nohal, because it's particularly with the water board and the budget is very big there. But I also want to indicate that the understanding of the irregular expenditure by portfolio committee members, it's a correct one, because if you do not follow the procurement processes or any other process that you administer as a department, be it frameworks, be it procedures that you come up with, if you don't follow any of them, obviously it tantamounts to an irregular process itself. But where it has a financial implication, it becomes very worse, because that's where you would have, as an accounting officer, to take action. In the past, we used to treat the irregular expenditure very differently, because we would request, regardless, the condonation or the department, through its internal processes, apply the delegations to the DG for him or her to write it off. Now, Treasury has seen that trend, and as practical as it was, they realize that there's lots of funds that are being misled, there's lots of funds that are misused, and in the name of DG approving the role by the writing off without Treasury's notice. Then there was an element of requesting Treasury for condonation as well. Now recently they've issued a practice note, which was issued in December 2018, where it provides all the department, including entities, agencies of the state, any other organ of state, to follow that practice note. And it simply says, before an accounting officer could condone or request for condonation, write off and or punish the transgressor, a thorough investigation, it's either through internal audit or external audit or external service provider that they would procure at that point in time, to determine the extent of the transgression and the value to that. The value is also important, however, the principle is the one that is key to that. Now, determining the principle, it will indicate as well to say to the National Treasury, you would request the condonation. Determining the value as well, the DG, or rather the accounting officer, may, with the permission of National Treasury, and have Treasury having satisfied itself that the investigations that have been undertaken were fair and just, and they were leading towards the transgressor being taken into to the box for them to can agree and condone. However, it becomes the responsibility of the accounting officer to take actions against the responsible person. So, Chair, across departments, including the national, some of them come from as long as one can think of irregular, and they were disclosed. So some of them we had to follow the processes of investigating before we could even take them out, and some of them have, in terms of law, been prescribed, and then in that case you can request a write-off, but it can only be the permission of the National Treasurer, together with the accounting officer, informed by the investigation report that would have been conducted. And I think on that basis, Chair, I think for all the irregular expenditures that are across, we are also working with some of the water boards myself, and we will take that action. I'm working with CISOs on this point in time,
And I think with the instruction from the portfolio committee, we'll work across. You will recall that we also have had NHPRC coming to this, and we've reduced that irregular expenditure to a certain degree. And some of the actions have been taken, had been taken place by the accounting officers responsible for those entities. So, Chair, we'll definitely work with all the entities, and we will work with the water boards as well, because there's a difficulty with water and services in terms of their capabilities and capacity to can deal with these issues. So we took action from our side, Chair, to lead on these issues of irregular expenditure. And that doesn't exclude the National Department of Work, because we did have some of the irregularities in the past, and while we had condoned them, we had to follow the process as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
CEO or Chair, who's that?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with an apology in terms of the typos. I think my mind is still in 2019. We had meant to say 2020. I hope my apology is accepted in that regard. In terms of the timelines, maybe just to provide the details, the acquisition of the ICT system, we are hoping we'll advertise it in January 2020 and have it appointed before the end of the financial year, so that we are able to utilize the 52 million that National Treasury allowed us to retain. The issue relating to the write-offs, I will not repeat because the CFO has dealt with that in detail. There was a question on why the irregular expenditure happened in 2015 and why we are only taking action now. Indeed, it did happen in 2018. However, the investigation only started in 2018. The investigation was done by the AGSA after there was a request through the Department of Human Settlement to investigate those tenders. So it was only after the investigations has been completed that we can only commence with the disciplinary hearing. As indicated, maybe if you could pardon us that we don't mention the names of the employees implicated until the whole process of the disciplinary process and has been finalized, so that we don't jeopardize any process. In terms of the issue relating to the acquisition of the information from the CIPC, we are currently negotiating an MOU where they will give us access to their information. They said they will give us access during January 2020. In that way, we'll be able to investigate the information and see if we're able to get all the schemes that we're supposed to be getting from them. And I think in terms of the stakeholder engagement, we have indicated that we're going to be signing a contract with the GCIS, who will be assisting us in terms of going out and having an intensified marketing and communication. That the MOU is currently under consideration. We are hoping to be signed before the December end. The copy has been sent to them to review so that we finalize, then we can start with the marketing and communication in January 2020. In terms of the irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Chair, as indicated, the disciplinary hearing is underway, and we're hoping once it's finalized, then it will tell us in terms of what then gets done. On the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as indicated, we are waiting for National Treasury to give us a response in terms of whether they will condone the transaction or not. You requested the details in terms of what does it relate to. It relates to some of the cancellation of the tenders that we indicated previously, where tenders were cancelled after there was a whistleblowing in terms of some procedures that were followed in the tender process. So we had to cancel those tenders. And as indicated previously, then that resulted in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So the bulk of that amount of 669,000 relates to those cancellation. Some relates to employees missing flights or flight cancellation. So We are managing them in terms of the framework that has been issued by National Treasury in terms of you investigate. Once we've investigated, then there is a process that then gets followed afterwards. And I think maybe I can hand over to the chairperson just to deal with some of the issues raised.
Chairperson, with regard to the rest of the questions posed on CSOS, is that where we are now? Okay. I'll try and address the questions that have not been answered. What was mentioned related to timelines, time taken to appoint the CFO, and I think the DG did begin to address that. In this case, Chairperson, we had recommended a CFO and then a number two. On the number one, the minister did respond, but by the time we made the offer, the person had accepted something else. So now we are in the process of looking at the number two. With regard to time frame to complete the database, that's what she was trying to address on the matter of, you want to add?
I think that's in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Just one item that I forgot. Remember there was an investment that was done with APSA that we had to withdraw earlier in fear of losing it. So as a result of the loss of the interest, we would have had if the investment was allowed to run. That's some of the money relating to the fruitless and wasteful. So that's the penalty that APSA penalized us for withdrawing that investment earlier. Check. And I think that it covers most of the questions.
No. Explain how. Can you explain properly so that rule, women?
Okay. The investment that was made in APSA was not made in the name of CSOS. It was made in the name of a third party who was, a middleman. So we had to rectify that to get the money back into CSOS, hence the withdrawal. Because obviously the fear is if the money is in the name of someone else and something happens to that person or something goes wrong, then that money will be lost forever. So it's part of the investment that were done, that were not done properly, including the VB. It was done at the same time with the VBS transaction. So as CSOS, we went forth in those circumstances to say we can't allow the money in the name of someone else to continue lying there. We then had to withdraw it. So that's the penalty that we suffered as a result of that withdrawal.
At least
two of
us, I think it's something that the DG must deal with them, because this is an institution. How do we invest the money of the institution if it's not? I think the law allows if it's a CFO or treasurer. Those are the people who can do that. So somebody just invest the money of the entity with its own the public money. I hope it's no longer in CSOS. It's gone already, probably, because that person warranted dismissal.
The person is no longer in CSOS.
If you indulge me, perhaps the reference point is always and must always be, what is the regulatory regime? How, in the first place, should you be investing when you do so? And that's explicitly set out in PFMA and the regulation. So in this case, it was a transgression. Now, once that has been detected, it has to be corrected. Hence, the steps that were taken, including Chairperson, the disciplinary cases, the litigation where it's necessary, and so forth. So you have to go the full length in rectifying and correcting those things. Unfortunately, in this case, while you were salvaging the capital that is invested, the holding, as in the bank, then says, but hang on, we have an agreement that you will allow this capital to lie here for period X, but now you are withdrawing early, so there's a penalty. And that penalty is a fruitless, it's wasteful, because we have nothing to show for it. That's essentially what the acting ombud is ventilating.
Okay, let's continue to receive answers, but you can then tell us how you're going to claim that money back, because you must pay the money back. You can even tell us how you are going to get that money back into the coffers of the state. Because there are the mistakes that you have to pay for them. So this is a mistake that you have to pay for it. So whoever has done it, you must get the process of getting that person to pay the money back. Unless if he's dead, it's fine. May his soul rest in peace. But if he's still alive, we must get the money back. Honorable member.
Thank you. I just want to make a follow-up on what Honorable Mashoko has said. We cannot condone that people should not follow proper procedures and say that, you know, whatever wasteful expenditure they've done or irregular expenditure, they've done it for a good cause. If at all it was for a good cause, they were supposed to have done environment. They were supposed to have met and then instead look at the budget and then realize at that time that what about we take money that was budgeted for glasses, for example, and shift it to this emergency or project that we feel should be done now. Thank you.
Let me allow you to respond.
In terms of taking actions, what we have done, we have laid criminal cases with the SAPS. The Hawks are looking into that. We've also approached the SIU, who are also assisting. We've also approached the FIC, which is the regulatory bodies related to the person who did the investment. We've also approached the regulatory body that regulated the professionals of those people who were also involved. So this for us will also serve as a deterrent to the employees to say if you do something wrong, action obviously will be taken. It's not like we have set and relaxed. Action is being taken to ensure that money or whatever money that we have lost is being recovered. We also have a civil case going on currently in the High Court relating to the amount of the investment. And I think in terms of the vacancy rate that was asked, so we are saying, how quick are you going to be filling the vacancy rate? We did submit our plan in terms of the vacancy rate when we're doing our budget with discussion with the department and national treasury. And the caution they gave us is to say, as CISOs, you have just been established, you are now only starting to do the collection. So you have not been stable enough to can see, you know what, you are now stable, you are sure that you are going to get your maybe 100 million collection in that financial year. So be cautious in terms of filling all the vacancies at once. You need to move steadily, because imagine a situation where we fill all the vacancies, but then there's a problem in terms of the collection. Then we'll be coming back here to say we have a vacancy rate that we are not, we have a, positions that we cannot be able to fund in terms of paying the salary bill. So we are moving together with National Treasury and the department to share that we need to be stable in our collections. Once we have we are stable, our processes are fine, and we have certainty in terms of our collection muscles, then we can then start moving quickly in terms of ensuring that all the vacancies are filled, ensuring that we have offices throughout the Republic of South Africa. There was an issue relating to the accrual. Do we have muscles? Is it compulsory for the schemes? I think that's the question that you asked. I think that is where we are coming to say, in terms of the amendment of the Act, then we will make it compulsory, because currently it is not. So we need that muscle to ensure that it becomes compulsory for the schemes to register and for the schemes to pay the levy. Then that will also provide us with certainty in terms of collection of levies. Thank you.
Chairperson, the questions that we received basically fell into six groups. The first questions related to seriousness, how serious we are looking at these matters. And the truth is that perhaps it's my style of communication, but we certainly take these matters seriously. The error that was noted was explained by the Chief Ombudsman. It is not an indication of not being serious. And the fact of adverse finding is not something that we are not taking seriously. In fact, that's why I started with that example, that I was envious of people who are not having findings against them in the awards of the Auditor General. The second group of questions fell under the topic of timelines. For example, timeline of completion of the database, timeline on appointments and vacancy rate, which she just spoken of, who appoints senior management, that was also explained by the DG. But the message that we must have timelines to our mitigations and all that is the message that we accept, that we will improve on. The third group fell under the slow pace of execution. The example was, why do you take so long to discipline people? How take so long in appointing people, which the Chief Ombudsman just touched on now. The fourth group, which is also addressed, it was to do with the quantum of the amounts written off. And there was an example that was given as the interest forgone on the APSA of the APSA withdrawal. The fifth group related to trust. A lot of things were said on the topic of trust, like even a request was made that perhaps something must be sent in between the meetings that highlights the status. The other question on trust was, why must we trust your promises? The rationale for your existence was another question by Honorable Masheko. Maybe we'll penalize you for things over which you've got no control. That's why she was talking about the legislation or getting us more teeth. How do you assure us that the errors will not be repeated? I don't know if you want to add there. But all those issues related to trust. And there were issues related to protocol, which have since been explained. How do we report to the minister, to the DG, to the department, the AXA, and so on. And some of which are legislated, like the DG explained, in terms of the appointment of... there are only two positions that the minister wants to be part of the caring in terms of the Act. It's the Chief Ombudsman and the CFO. The lower level positions the board does allow to appoint them. And the last point, obviously, is the one of protocol. Yes, I think the chair did explain that sometimes they will deal directly with the Auditor General's office, which is sometimes something that we know the committee has got the right to do. And there was something by Mr. Honorable Mashekho about we don't want just to note it, we want to do something about it. And that's really the sum total of the questions that were tabled at or leveled at CSIS. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Estate Agency.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the DG has dealt with two matters directed at the Chair as well, which are the letters from the Minister's office. I concur with his approach to the committee. Mine is merely to confirm that responses to those letters have indeed been submitted to the Minister. The letter that relates to the process of appointing a CEO was submitted to the Minister a day after the Minister's letter. And that response speaks to the process of the board in ensuring that the appointed candidate complies with the security competence processes. That letter also confirms our consultations with the then minister on the matter. I concur with the DG's approach to the committee as to then the process going forward. The second letter related to various allegations made against the CEO. And again, it has been wrongfully reported that the minister wrote to the board because there was no action on the matter. In fact, we were able to respond to the minister within the 7 days, going further than an action plan, but providing her with outcomes of the processes of the board, which were well underway at the time that the minister wrote to us. And the minister's letter does not make the allegations that have floated in the media that there were delays. It simply is a procedural letter requesting the action plan of the board. I trust that the minister will provide further details on the matter. I thought, Chair, that it would be important perhaps just to share with the committee some of the pressure points on the entity that explain a number of these allegations. I just want to touch on three things. One is that there is a cohort that is advancing the argument for self-regulation. Regrettably, the country has emerged from about 7 years and emerged with a new act which points to a regulated environment. And it would appear that there are still players in the industry that would have wished for a different legislative regime. I suspect because we have a broader mandate, this matter is even going to be more and more difficult on the entity because we are now looking at regulating under the new act players in the industry that have not been formally regulated. So I think it's useful for the committee to be alive to that. Now, unfortunately, some of those tendencies have then also combined with internal matters, ordinary HR matters, to create a rather difficult environment, right? And the unfortunate thing about it is that it's led to allegations, some of which you have seen, which are very bold, many of them very defamatory, right? And with a set and clear plan, one of them says, to remove the CEO. Now, it doesn't matter what the board does, and I'll explain what the board's processes are. For as long as that outcome is not achieved, you can imagine then the pushback that it has to deal with, right? The board, unfortunately, cannot merely work on allegations alone. It has to make these decisions based on fact, which means it must subject allegations to processes, and some of the processes have been explained in the letter to the minister. Then there is a third pressure point which is beginning to emerge that works with this around this issue of transformation and seemingly a resistance to some of the transformation issues. Again, the new act is very specific on transformation, a fund that must be set up and so forth, and again, we will have to be alive to those issues. Those are some of the shifting sands that are playing around the entity. But the committee must rest assured that the institution has processes. And you will see how some of these allegations or accusations come outside of institutional processes. Like we are sitting here talking about a letter to the chairperson from the minister, even before the minister had considered it or the chairperson had received it, it's out in the media. Those are some of the things that are happening. But we have processes to deal with many of these things. And if we are here to present a positive report, first let me just comment about that. We were responding to processes from last year that were affirmed also by the Auditor General, the improvement issues and so forth. It's not to say they're not headaches, but it's also not our wish to burden the committee with headaches that we are mandated to deal with. And so that's why we are a little more positive, because we accept our responsibility and the sleepless nights it causes us. And we will share with both the department, the minister, and the highest accounting body, being this one, when those matters really are unmanageable. But I do want the committee to have confidence that the institution is moving to a better place. It's perfectly imperfect. It's not perfect, but it is moving to a better place. And I hope that against the input by the DG and myself, then the CEO can focus on the matters that we were asked to deal with, particularly the three matters.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson of the committee, I will deal with the questions in reverse, meaning dealing with the last one and then working my way back to the first question. On the issue that the chairperson and the DG have raised, I'd like to say that I am obviously respectful of the proposal that's been put on the table that we don't specify people's names, but I will obviously speak to the designations around issues of irregular expenditure, the amounts, and the nature of the transactions that resulted in that. But having said that, Chair, I think it's also important for me to state that it's very interesting that in certain contexts, names are not mentioned. But if it's an allegation against Mahmoud Mohlala, it is out there. It's everywhere. It's in the internet. It's all over the place. It's on newspapers when you open them. But be that as it may, let me speak to the issues as they stand. And I will also respond in detail to the allegations that have been made against me, because there's no substance to those allegations, and it all really stems from...
No. You don't have to... Don't respond to allegations. Response to the questions that we have asked. The chair and the DG has spoken to the matter. So please don't talk to those allegations.
Thank you, Chair. Let me go first to start with the issue of irregular expenditure. It has come up from two honourable members and from the chairperson. There are three items that make up the irregular expenditure. The first one is an amount of 90,000 in relation to what is called the Ghana trip. The second one is 1,065,000, which comes from the appointment of the internal auditors who are appointed irregularly. And the third one is also just over a million, and it relates to the IT services. Now, with regard to the Ghana trip, there was a trip that was undertaken by a board member without proper authorization, and this obviously resulted in it being classified as irregular expenditure. And I believe that the board has made recommendations to the minister, and from a consequence management point of view, in relation to the executive concerned, steps have been taken, and there is an outcome in terms of the disciplinary process that was undertaken in relation to that staff member. With regard to the issue of internal audit, this is an issue that we have referred to National Treasury to condone this irregular expenditure, and National Treasury is still considering this. But in simple terms, what actually happened here is that there was a procurement process that was undertaken. Instead of appointing the first recommended entity, the third recommended entity was the one that was then appointed. And this was raised by the AG, and then and executive management has then acted on it and obviously asked for condonation, and consequence management will then obviously follow, subject to board approval in relation to that. With regard to the IT services, I think I would want to just maybe elaborate slightly on this issue. Our IT at EAB has very problematic, in the sense that you will find that most of the service providers that were historically appointed to provide IT services at EAB were not properly procured. Now we are dealing with a situation whereby we now need to regularize the procurement. And we found that not only were they not properly procured, but in fact, I think if not 100%, 90% of those entities were not transformed entities. And we are now obviously now working backwards to make sure that when we apply transformation, it's not only in relation to external issues, but also in relation to internal issues. So we are now looking at the reason this was raised by the AG was in relation to the procurement processes that were followed. And I believe one of the mandates that the board gave me on my appointment was to specifically speak to the issues around making sure that procurement procedures are followed properly and we regularize where there's irregular appointment, and if needs be, we cancel and start from scratch in relation to that. Chair, I'd like to also indicate that in the context of IT, I want to also speak to the question that's been asked around New Dawn. Now, when we're in the middle of the audit, the issue of not having proper IT systems was again raised by the AG. And in order to address those issues, we obviously had to identify entities that could be brought into the system in order to deal with those issues so that we could obviously clear the audit findings during the process. New Dawn was procured properly following all required procedures. And that obviously I think the chair has spoken to, because all this information was put to the Social and Ethics Committee of the board, and a full investigation was done and a report has been prepared in relation to that. That speaks to all processes and procedures having been followed. But the IT system really needs to be looked into at EAB and it has to be fixed. Even the issues around the production of FSCs, as a service provider, and I think we raised this at the last hearing where we were here, where we indicated that there is a challenge with regard to the service provider that was being used in relation to the FFCs. We procure a SAP system, but the SAP system does not have the FFC configuration. Then what then happens, you have a service provider for SAP, and then the next thing you go and appoint yet another service provider to create a system to produce FSCs, but in doing that, you then don't tie that service provider to a contract whereby you own the intellectual property. So your service provider actually owns your source code, and they determine as and when they provide the service and how they provide the service. So these are the things we're trying to now fix, to say all the FSCs and the application that relates to production of FSCs is the intellectual property of the EAB. It cannot be held by another third-party service provider that can hold you ransom at a later date. So those are the things that we needed to deal with in terms of making sure that the IT system is fixed and it's regularized, and we make sure that we have service providers that are fully transformed and that actually do the work that is required from them. So I think that deals with the issue around irregular expenditure. In relation to transformation, I believe that yes, we have presented a document that speaks to transformation, and when we talk transformation at EAB, we are mindful of all the categories of transformation. It is obviously people from historically disadvantaged backgrounds, black, male, female, persons with disability, across the board. So we look at all the categories and we apply it across the board. I just want to indicate that, as the chair has already indicated, that transformation has been a problem in this industry, and one of the issues, transformation is also one of the other factors that I was told to deal with quite critically when I got appointed to the position of CEO. And I must say, there may not be overt lack of compliance with transformation, but you do see undertones where different things are thrown into the pot in relation to the industry not necessarily being comfortable with regard to the transformation programs that we have on the table. But having said that, we believe that transformation is critical, it's imperative, and we will do whatever it takes to make sure that we actually make sure this industry is fully transformed. But I also believe it's also important to note that I believe in the property sector, it's only EAB that has in their law where it's specifically stated that we have an obligation to transform. So we do expect that in terms of the new act, we will obviously put systems in place in terms of that, but I do believe there will be a lot of resistance that's still to come to the fore in relation to transformation and making sure that we implement it fully. There was also a question around, from a transformation point of view, this issue around the 50 million and where we're going to get the 50 million. I think, remember, as I was responding to that question, I indicated that the board has said that we can only use the interest from the set aside, which is the 7 million rand. So there isn't an intention to use the entire 50 million for the incubation, but it is the interest that comes from the 50 million. But I also need to just also indicate that transformation, transformation is not, how can I put it? If you want to sincerely transform, it is always imperative to make sure that you also put your money where your mouth is. Because a lot of the initiatives that you need to put in place from a transformation point of view do require capital injection to be put on the table. For instance, there are some provinces where you actually find very limited or no activity by black estate agents. Now, how are you then going to be able to stimulate SMMEs in those particular areas? Not unless you actually put money there and make sure that you monitor it. Because I think the critical issue is around monitoring the utilization of the money that is put towards transformation. And I believe in our plan, we speak concisely to how we will monitor and make sure that there's no abuse, but also make sure that we realize the full benefits of the transformation agenda. So I think that one we'll always be mindful of. The issue around the interest and Section 32.4, we are mindful of that, and I think we have raised it, and it may be something that we need to just speak to the department and see how we all resolve this. And I believe that I know that we have a stakeholder group that is responsible for amendments to the Act, and that group is where we will be discussing the issues around interest and the fact that there's no provision around the accrual of interest or interest being payable into the Fidelity Fund as is currently in terms of the Estate Agency Affairs Board Act. So that issue is top of agenda, and we are dealing with it, and we'll make sure that we deal with it fully. I think the issue about my appointment, I think that has already been dealt with at great length. The issue around New Dawn, I've dealt with that. Now, there's another issue that has been raised in relation to whether I'm suing an employee. I'd like to just indicate, Chair, that it is correct. I have issued summons for defamation of character in relation to that particular employee. That employee responded in a very unbecoming manner to a lawful instruction in relation to his employment. But can I just make this one point? I think you must be mindful that of the fact that this is a month of 16 days of activism against women abuse. And the kind of conduct and the manner in which that particular employee spoke to me, not in my official capacity, but personally, borders on abuse in the work environment of a female executive. This is a factor that is there, but is very veiled, and people do not address it directly. And I'd really like, Chair, that this committee be mindful of these particular issues, and I don't think it's restricted to this particular employee only. I think it permeates across, whereby there is certain treatment that is meted out to a female executive which would not be meted out to a male executive. But I'll leave it at that point, and I think we'll then obviously deal with that particular issue. The issue around the attorneys that have been employed and the cost of...
CEO, you know, when I'm chairing the meeting, I expect those that I'm working with to assist me to chair the meeting. Because members, they are not listening only they will want to make follow-ups on issues that you raise. So that's why I'm saying we are not in a court proceedings, and we are not in a process of clearing names or prosecuting any names. And there is the forum in terms of the legislative framework into the in the institution to handle all those issues. So please help me to chair the meeting. When we say the chair has responded, and I could even see the chair was trying to avoid things that would put him in a corner that he might not have answers if we make follow-ups. Please help us to chair the meeting. Leave things that are on personal. Don't panic by the environment as everybody, you think everybody is joining the queue to prosecute you. There is justice in South Africa. You'll get your justice at the time and the time that will be put for you to go through that process, if they have to be that process. Please, Chairperson has dealt with the issue, and the DG has actually assisted him. Answer things that we have been requested to come and answer in this meeting.
Thank you very much, Chair. Forgive me for being emotional, because these are personal issues. I will stick to what is being said, but it's very interesting that these issues are raised in relation to me. But be that as it may, Chair. There was a question around the internship and learnership, and what plans are there to absorb these learners after they've completed. At the last sitting, I think I spoke in great detail that the reason we are doing the internship and the incubation simultaneously is that we expect to set up these SMMEs, and then once these interns have completed, we then expect to plug them into the SMMEs. So that is why that we are having this double approach. We are not just saying internship, we are saying internship together with incubation, so that we then have entities that are ready to receive these interns into the system. So that is the long-term plan, and we obviously expect that these entities will then grow and will be able to be sustainable in the industry. The suggestion around working with the Department of Small Enterprise Development, I think it is a very valid suggestion. We'll obviously look at it, because we had obviously been approached by certain players in the industry that wanted to approach CEFA with regard to funding, which is the Small Enterprise Funding Agency, which falls under the department. So we'll obviously have the further discussion with regard to that. There was a question around the issue of the banks and how what are we doing in relation to other banks. FNB was the first bank that was willing to sign on the dotted line. We are having discussions with your Standard Bank, your NetBank, your Investec. And our approach is obviously to approach those banks whereby we have invested, or where our fidelity fund is being invested, to then say, now you need to obviously give back to that very industry that is investing money within the bank. So we are approaching that those entities. Even with regard to the different mobile operators, we are approaching MTN, although MTN was not very keen to come to the party when we approached them, but Telkom and Cell C have indicated that they would be willing to come to the party. The only reason I believe that Vodacom would have signed on the dotted line first is because they have the transversal contract with government, so it's obviously easier to incorporate it into their business plan. But we will be talking to the different entities in relation to the different mobile operators in relation to making sure that we get them into the program. There was also the issue about the issue around transformation. I think I've spoken to issues around transformation, both internal and external. Then there was the issue around engaging the different provinces. Yes, we have actually engaged most of the provinces. I think the only provinces that we have not been able to align there in order to have a full engagement would be Northwest and the Eastern Cape. With all the other provinces, we've already engaged them. It's just that because the systems differ from province to province with regard to how soon they finalize processes in relation to the program on job creation. That is what is causing the delay. But the ones that have been very quick and very active in relation to making sure that they finalize their agreements with ourselves in relation to the program have been KZN and Gauteng, and that's why they're being highlighted. But I do believe that the Free State and Northern Cape are also on their way to making sure that we deal with all the issues that are required. I think, Chair, on that, I think I have covered everything else that has been asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tseki, Honorable Powell, and Honorable Mvana.
Thank you, Chair.
But Honorable Tseki, Honorable Members, 20 to 1, if you raise questions and 1 o'clock arrives and I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 1.
Okay. Yeah, mine is not a question, Chair, okay. A comment. Member Tseki can give me a mandate to talk on her behalf.
No.
Chair, an observation. When I met the Del Shavan, the whole head had some hair. I can see where the hair is going on daily basis. And the expenditure of this $3 billion. Chair, I think we are all political organs in this meeting. And we need to respect each other. In my previous work, if a member of a committee, I don't want to use a member of the committee who is a member of a certain political party, if they have received a certain media information or a certain things that alleges the unbecoming, they will normally forward it to the chair that was chairing that committee, regardless of political affiliation. When we are sitting like this, that information is not going to come from the floor. It will come from the chair. The chair raising it with the department, he or she would have raised it even before the actual meeting because you have got access, continuous access with the minister. So I think that's one thing that we should learn. Of all of us as members of the committee to relate with you at a very high level that these issues, you can't protect any of the members of the staff or members of ourselves here when there's an allegation. You will raise it. So all I'm saying, Chair, can we respect you? And the allegations that goes to shops toward level of human resources and IR, industrial relation issues, there's different platform to raise those issues. And if now we want to invite trade unions, Member Powell is actually saying we should bring trade unions here for them to say the side of the story in the manner she's raising issues. I think in the next time, Chair, please allow us, because now I wanted to call it to order. Allow us, if she continues to behave in the manner, because it's not the first time, she continues to behave in the manner while you are chairing this meeting. Let's respect you. You can still go. I don't want to be emotional like that.
Thank you.
Honorable members, I've been appointed to be the chair. I'll fight my battles. Leave my battles for me, Honorable Tseki. Leave my battles for me. Don't allow members to raise questions. Yes, and you can do that, but don't do it in my name. Not in my name. I'm the speaker here, which accommodating all the parties. Yeah, you know, President Zuma used to say when we are in meeting, so it depends on another person how, because it's important that you raise questions that you want to benefit out of the answer.
So if you raise it for the sake of TV or something else, it's your own business. We should not entertain those things. Honorable Powell?
Chairperson, I just want to be clear. I'm appointed as a Member of Parliament, and one of my core functions in law is to question and hold the department to account. I sit here exercising that function. I take umbrage with the comments made by my colleague now that I am perhaps being abusive. I am not being abusive, and nor, in questioning the department, was I called to order by yourself, Honourable Chairperson. So, just to respond, I don't have any further questions, but just to respond to the questions that I posed to the Estate Agency Affairs Board Chairperson and CEO. What I asked for was simply to be furnished with the responses that the Minister was furnished with when she wrote to Chairperson Mr. Biko. We did not cast spurious allegations of our own. We merely repeated allegations that were contained in the Honourable Minister Sisulu's letter that she herself wrote, and we simply, as part of our constitutional oversight function, requested to be provided with the responses. Now, Deputy Director General, respectfully, you ask that we allow the investigations to unfold and to be fulfilled and to be tabled. That's fine. But the Minister directed her letters with a 7-day response time, and she wanted the full plans within 7 days. It's now the 3rd of December. The last letter was sent on the 25th of November, which means we are now on day 8. We are simply asking to be provided with letters. And if anybody in this room has an issue with me representing and standing up for the interests of the South African people who have been left behind, then they may raise that with me. But I will not be abused, and I will not have all sorts of spurious remarks made about my character as a Member of Parliament in this House when I'm simply exercising what is my constitutional obligation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Sikhwai, Nyete, leave things that are not for the meeting. Honourable Mvana, you're not noted. You're not.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson. I remember the day when the entities were saying it's their first time to be called in the portfolio committee after 25 years. This day reminds me of that. There are no questions except the comment. You know, out of the crash course that we got from the acting DG, I was a little bit not sure exactly on how to work with the entities. But I want to commend that, thank you very much, Chairperson, in terms of how they have responded. And out of that crash course that we're given here, I'm sure now they are clear on exactly what is it the Portfolio Committee wants them to do. Thanks, Chair. I'll park my questions for the next few.
Honorable Tweke.
Thanks, Chair, to the CISO. I think you gave us an update in the DDG, Tatil Shaban, on the appointment of the CFO, but you did not elaborate or speak more on the, what is that, Chief Ombuds? Yes. Yeah, we wanted that on record. Yeah, or you'll respond on record. I wanted to get the progress. Thus far with regard to appointing the Chief Ombuds. Thanks.
Honorable Sikhwai and Mashiru, please, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, we close.
No, Chair. Just as a way of comment. Look, maybe sometimes when we, because this constitutional right, woman, apprentice with all of us equally. I was the president of a union. I was the president of a union at some point. And as a trade unionist, I I might have a difficulty to talk to you because then we are now equals. But the point I wanted to make is that when we allow us to talk to the whole meeting, there must be certain parameters of talking to a meeting. But unfortunately, you are saying we must allow it. Politically, there is time where we must talk politics and administration. So sometimes allow us then. You must leave the officials to go. We remain talking politics because there is a need for us to talk politics of what we are saying rather than talking to officials of political mandate. It does not help us, I mean, honestly speaking. There is a need that we must sit here and talk politics and we then pass our judgment on those politics.
In two seconds, summarize what each one, if there is anything that you want to say.
Chairperson, the committee invited us and the entities to outline the plans to address the audit concerns, which I just want to confirm, Chairperson, that this is the work that on our part in oversight of the entities we continue to look at to ensure that those matters do not only recur but are actually dealt with to completion. As I said, we have a CEO's forum, but there are bilaterals between the executives as well as the other functionaries, so we are fairly comfortable, Chair, that these are matters that are within the ambit of our governance oversight. Thank you, Chairperson.
As resource, we accept and appreciate the input from the members, and we will do our best to comply.
No further comments, Chair. Just to thank the committee and the Chair and hoping to return with the balance of the matters as advised. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, everybody who's been elected has got a constitutional right, but your constitutional right does not have to infringe on other people's rights. So, when we call the meeting, we have an agenda that we've put. I've asked the department to come and brief us on the action plan of the Auditor General, how they are going to respond to the findings of Auditor General. And you ask things that are not related to that, and we expect them to respond. I'm not going to protect you when they are not responding to that. That's why there is an agenda that we sent out, honorable members. So your constitutional right is limited to the agenda of the meeting. We had various platforms to ask questions. Ministers come to the House and they are being asked direct questions as ministers. And now, if you want to ask questions of the ministers in the meeting where the minister is not present, it doesn't help. So if we can help one another to make the department be accountable on issues that we have raised as an agenda, it will be very helpful because we'll be able to follow up. Where are we? Because if we just raise that random, it's a risk for members of parliament because you will not be able to follow up on issues. So it's important to note that the more we become systematic, the more that we'll be able to get a coherent response and which will lead to the positive outcome. If, of course, we want the positive outcome, that our people must get better services. Because I'm not sure all of us who have got the same interest, honorable members. But that's the importance of getting the coherent response on issues that we have raised, because you are dealing with the human beings that must prepare when they come to our meeting. Tomorrow, if they come and just talk off their minds, we'll get complaints to say they are not responding to their issues. The agenda was about the Auditor General, and we will engage the Auditor General that we have interacted with the department. They've actually made commitment to this portfolio committee that your findings are going to be addressed. And if in the next term after the annual general, the annual tabling of the report, the same things comes in, then we'll then be able to hammer on the department and say you came to this meeting and make commitment that you are going to attend to those issues. I think that is what very much important. And I want to thank the department and chairs of the board and the officials for having come and response to questions as honourable members have asked. Thank you very much. You can go out quietly because our meeting is still on. Quietly. Oh.
Chair, there was just one little matter that we thought at the end of the meeting we could deal with. I asked the CEO to hold it back so that we take the questions first, and we are not seen to be influencing. It's a little gift bag for the committee members from the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll distribute it on your behalf because we don't have much time. Thank you. We don't have time to shake hands, Chair. We'll do it next time. Can we do it quietly as we proceed? Honourable members, can we look at the program? You said Peggy and Powell will continue the meeting. If you want to hold the meeting, you can go outside. So, honourable members, we have actually circulated the program as you requested, that you must circulate. But the intention was to for you to see what is it that we are planning for the next term. And there are two precisely of the things that I've explained on the oversight. We have discovered that we are dealing with two departments, but we are given one budget. And therefore, already our budget is exhausted. And this committee has taken a decision that we should visit Guyana, we should go to Lesotho Highlands. But we have written the letter to the Chair of Chairs to request that we be treated as two, even if we are one committee with one chair. But there are still two departments, and each department has to have its own budget. So that we have done it. What we then did was to say that we have the program that indicated the oversight, and as we explained in previous meetings, and the other one is the program that does not have an oversight. If the oversight is not approved, would actually invite provinces and municipalities to come to Cape Town for them to be accountable on the conditional grants that we appropriate for them. So that is the program that we are circulating to you now. So we do not confirm whether we'll go to oversight or not. But if it's approved, then we will. The one that has oversight will remain. Then the issues of the provinces and municipalities will then come in the next term. Honorable August, you're raising hands.
Yes, Chair, thank you. I understand what you're saying. The first one, 20, the oversight to the Lesotho Islands, to be confirmed. The second one, the visit to Guyana project. There's nothing saying next to it. So is that confirmed now? And also, if it's not approved as yet, by when will we have approval so that we can also apply our minds and diaries with regards to the date set? Thank you.
That's why there's two programs. They've not yet been confirmed, Honourable Member. Honourable Power.
Chairperson, just the date on the program that doesn't include the oversight visits, it says Thursday the 6th. Parties have caucuses on Thursday mornings, don't they? So is that an error? Because everything else says Tuesday, Friday, but that 6th is a Thursday.
In Parliament, there is week that is called committee weeks. If there is committee weeks, we take all the days, no caucuses of the party. It's only when there is a plenaries and we are inside, yeah. So you will then have caucuses of the party. Honourable August.
Chair, you never responded to my second question. When there's confirmation on the oversight spot, when will we be informed? That's what I'm asking.
As soon as possible. What can I say? As soon as the House Chair approved, because it might come back, because it must go to the House Chair, and it still have to go to another process of the Chief Whip. So if we get approved, then you'll be notified as soon as possible. But what members must do is to those that does not have an official passport, they should actually organize that through Koliswa so that you get your official passport. Honorable Mashiko? Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.